the first writer, a really sincere parent, writes in and says, "Dear Rabbi Kellerman, I stay home with my kids. I see the importance of it, but sometimes I just resent it. I worked hard for my degree, and now I often wish I was just working and not with the kids all day. When I'm being a good mom, quote unquote, I'm happy I'm not working. But when I yell and completely lose patience, then I wonder if it might be better for them if I were not with them constantly. I understand that I have to work on anger and patience, and I try. I would work part-time, but that's not really possible in my field now. I can't imagine working full-time and leaving them with a nanny. What do I do?" So this is obviously a very, very sincere person who really wants to do the best for her kids and has a legitimate question, which is, you know, what happens if I'm really not the right person to be there full-time with my kids? So let's answer like this. Every person who was ever charged with caring for kids, whether it's full-time parents, right, all the way through just a visiting babysitter, they all agree that childcare is the greatest challenge anyone could ever be tasked with. Kids are selfish and they're hedonistic, and let's be honest, they can be really cruel. Most children, unless something's been done to them, most children have as strong a will as most adults. The problem is that they lack maturity and they lack judgment. So they'll fight to exhaustion for that which is ridiculous, hurtful, and even self-destructive. And they haven't experienced enough of life to even know to question their decisions. So in short, we are talking about people who are dangerous to themselves and others. And our job is to help them grow into refined adults. That's sort of like trying to stuff a tornado into a gunny sack. So it's not an easy job. Given the choice between being a physician, an attorney, an accountant, an engineer, an investor, or any other highly respected and fairly compensated professional on one hand, or being someone involved in full-time childcare on the other hand, the more attractive options are obvious. In fact, just by virtue of the salary one receives for real employment, full-time parenting looks pretty unattractive. So the first thing that I want to tell this parent is you aren't crazy. You are not crazy for yearning to get out of the house and away from your kids. The real question is why anyone would want to stay home with their kids full-time. There are a handful of people who are built for it. There are people who just love kids. And the pleasure they receive from spending time with them drowns out whatever pain the kids inflict on them day in and day out. And there's also a handful of people, I'm going to say it straight, who don't get that much pleasure from spending time with their kids, but they don't have the intelligence or skill set to do anything else. But for the vast majority of people, like you, who have a professional degree or could earn one, what possible motivation could there be for being a full-time parent? Okay, that is your question, I believe. So now, let's begin to address it. First, there is the biblical perspective. Once they had kids, the matriarchs, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, they were all full-time mothers. Given that their husbands flatly rejected the values and customs of the surrounding culture, it would be difficult to make the argument that the matriarchs shunned careers because no other women in the surrounding culture had them. If Abraham wasn't afraid to smash his generation's idols to pieces, it's hard to believe that his wife would have hesitated to leave her kids at home and open up a store or a hotel just because no one else was doing it. No one else was doing it was irrelevant to Avram and Sarah. The impression we get is that raising the Jewish nation was something that the matriarchs valued above all else. And that's why they devoted their lives to it. So that raises the question. I mean, these were extraordinary women. Why would they value wasting their considerable potential on a bunch of badly behaved children? We don't think that the matriarchs were women who couldn't have done something else. They were the best of the best, the brightest, the most competent, the most extraordinary, the most creative. Why would they take all of that potential and waste it on hanging out with little brats? Why would they do that? So Revolba opens his book on education, Zvi Binyan, with these words. He says, "Chinuch, Jewish education, is a mission of the first priority. He's telling us that from a Torah perspective, from a Jewish perspective, every other mission is second priority. Chinuch is a mission of the first priority. And he continues, a mission whose success guarantees the continuity of the Jewish people and its Torah. Revolba is telling us why it is that chinuch is the mission of the first priority. It's because that mission guarantees that the Jewish people in the Torah will continue through history. Revolba is arguing that parents can be the most influential force in a child's life, if they wish to be. Since the whole adult world is and has always been made up of children who were influenced and then grew up to be adults who embodied their childhood experiences, therefore parents have the opportunity to determine who the next generation will be. For better or worse, parents create the next generation. They are creating the future of the world. I'm fond of asking people, who had more influence on your personality and achievements? Your parents or Walter Cronkite? Now, even though he only died 10 years ago, most millennials have no idea who Walter Cronkite was. And even those like me who grew up during the 19 years, when he served as anchorman for the most watched television show in America, the CBS Evening News, even we will admit that his influence on us was minimal compared to our parents. Cronkite, named year after year by opinion polls as, quote, the most trusted man in America, contributed far less to who we are than mom and dad. Whether we like it or not, the question of what Klal Yisrael, the Jewish nation, will look like 20 years from now depends far more on how much time we spend with our kids and how well or poorly we parent them than anything else that we will do in our lives. So says Revolba in the first line of the book. But Revolba goes a step further. He doesn't just lay out the amoral fact that parents are the most powerful influencers in their child's lives. He takes it a step further, and he makes parenting into a moral and a religious duty. His very next line reads, Chinuch is also a responsibility assigned to every father and mother, and one cannot excuse oneself from it, saying, this isn't my job. When Revolba says that chinuch, Jewish education, is a responsibility assigned to every father and mother, who assigned it? It was God. It was the master of the universe at Mount Sinai. According to Revolba, at Mount Sinai, Hashem told us that we err in thinking that daycare should be handled by daycare professionals, while we parents go off to do more satisfying things. We cannot claim, not my monkeys, not my zoo. When I give birth to another human being, I am saddled with the responsibility for raising that person to be a good, God-fearing, productive adult with refined character. That's the job that I accept when I conceive a child. I suppose one could argue that even Orthodox Judaism sanctions parenting secondhand, meaning parents enlisting help from others. I mean, after all, almost all Orthodox Jews send their kids off to school. And so clearly, we believe in handing off, in franchising out some of our parenting responsibilities. But you have to look at this reality in a historical context. Historically, Orthodox Jews only used school to supplement what they were doing at home, starting during Talmudic times. That is, if you look in the Talmud, in Tractate Bava Basra 21a, there it reports that the first Jewish elementary school was created by Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla in the first century, and that was because of parental incompetence. But for more than 1,000 years before Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla, there were no Jewish elementary schools, and parents exclusively taught their own children. Meaning the Talmudic perspective was that parents are primarily responsible for educating their children, and we only enlist the help of a school to do that which the parent cannot do. That's the way the Talmud views schools. Even after Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla, there was no child sent to school before the age of 6, and school hours were very limited. Parents were the primary educators. It's only In recent years, when most Jewish schools started stretching their hours to start before 9 o'clock in the morning and finish after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and every school principal will tell you that the increasing hours that we see even today in the day schools is a response to parental demand. It's not because of scholastic necessity. Parents want to spend more time at work and at play, and part-time supplementary education therefore has segued into something different. It's segued into daycare. That is the service that schools are providing today. There is nothing that two-year-olds need to learn that can't be done at home and at the park with other parents and their kids. There is no five-year-old who needs to master so much information at age five that he has to be in a classroom 6 hours a day. And there is no 10-year-old who needs to leave for school before sunrise and come home at dark, which happens in many cities. The number of hours our kids spend away from us has soared. And no one believes, at least no one who's involved in the educational system believes, that this is because our kids need to be away from their parents in order to thrive. We all know it's because we feel we need to be away from them to thrive. And the secular childcare experts haven't exactly been a moral anchor in this narcissistic storm that happened in the last 20 to 30 years. Most parenting authors adjust their values and change their prescriptions to match the book market. For example, when parenting was valued above all else, Dr. Spock was its champion. All of our parents grew up on Dr. Spock. And as late as 1977, Dr. Spock wrote, quote, "If a mother realizes clearly how vital this kind of care is to a small child, it will make it easier to decide that the extra money she may earn is not so important after all," quote unquote. That was in 1977. But after decades of criticism and falling book sales, Spock amended his presentation considerably. And in the 1992 edition of his famous Baby and Child Care, he writes, quote, "Parents who know that they need a career or a certain kind of work for fulfillment should not give it up for the sake of their children." And notice, his shift in focus is from what was once judged critical to the child, that is, having a full-time parent, to what is now judged critical to the parents, having a job. So parents seek assurances that the right sort of childcare will be as good for their child as parenting once was. And today's most popular authors are quick to offer that, and even more. They'll tell parents that daycare is even better for their children than if the kids were spending time with their parents. And if this were not enough of a salve for our collective conscience, there is another booming voice that justifies leaving our kids behind and pursuing careers. We are told, and we wholeheartedly believe, that we need the money we can earn by leaving our kids with daycare. And because material wealth is addictive, there's a truth to this. I'll give you an example. My generation's childcare guru was a brilliant woman by the name of Penelope Leach. So Leach herself has adjusted in the last 20 years what she recommends, exactly like Spock. But Leach recently wrote, quote, "The material standards of living most of us enjoy and most of us aspire to are higher than they have ever been, but so is their cost. People who can earn enough can achieve a good life, but only those who can keep earning more and more can hold on to it. Because however fast money or credit accumulates, luxuries are transformed into necessities even faster," quote unquote. The data tells us that kids need parents more than they need any other thing in the world. Our kids tell us that too. They ask for our attention, and when we're too busy to provide it, they tantrum. In more extreme cases, they steal or they self-mutilate or engage in other extreme behaviors to catch our eye. It's tragically ironic that some of these kids who are the most desperate for their parents' attention end up being sent away from home to places that we believe will be more professionally managing their acting out. And all these kids wanted really was mommy and daddy. It was a political analyst, Mary Eberstadt, who back in 1995 publicized the MCI telecommunications pamphlet that outlined, quote, positive parenting steps, unquote, that would make separations easier on the conscience. MCI advocated a range of technological solutions for the modern parent, and they included, quote, sending messages by fax. Remember, this is 1995. Sending messages by fax, tape recording bedtime stories, arranging for the videotaping of children's events that take place while parents away. You understand, so that the parents can see the event that they missed. I miss my kid's graduation. I miss my kid's soccer game. But I'll watch the video. The pamphlet continues. Even the parent too busy to record his own bedtime stories can rely on the information age to see him through, especially if he lives in New York, where a pre-recorded storytelling by phone service called Let's Imagine is available for only 85 cents a minute. If it weren't serious, if they didn't mean this, it wouldn't be so tragic. But an entire industry has cropped up to try to bridge the gap and provide our children with a connection to parents who aren't present. Okay, let's go back to your basic question. You asked, quote, when I'm being a good mom, I'm happy I'm not working. But when I yell and completely lose patience, then I wonder if it'd be better for them if I were not with them constantly. So the answer to your question is this. We're all young when we begin practicing being parents, and we haven't had time to work on our patience, our kindness, and perhaps most importantly, our humility. And parenting forces me to confront all these potentials that I have and see painfully how much I have to grow. It is really hard to feel less than perfect. Sometimes I feel really flawed. And if I could just shirk my parenting responsibilities, then I would never have to confront my personal weaknesses or overcome them. We can live out our lives as a shadow of who we could really become. And that would be tragic. So I suppose outside of the Jewish biblical injunction that we've got to raise the kids that we conceive, the greatest reason to stay home with our kids is not for them, but for us. Nothing presents us with a challenge to grow like our kids. And for those of us brave enough to step up to the plate like you're doing, nothing helps us grow more. That's a lesson our grandparents and our great-grandparents knew very well, and one that hopefully our generation will learn and someday be able to pass on to our kids when they're old enough to start raising their kids. But at the moment, the writer of this question is my hero. You're an amazing, amazing person, and you're doing the toughest job of this generation. Your kids will benefit, and you'll benefit. Okay, before I jump into the next question, are there any follow-up questions on what we just discussed?
This is not a question. This is a comment. I just want to say yashar koach on having the courage and the inspired genius to say the truth.
You're very sweet. I'm far from a genius. I rarely say genius things, but if I talk long enough, something sensible usually comes out. So you're very, very sweet. Thank you. That's very kind of you. I'm glad you're getting something out of this, and I really appreciate that. It's nice to hear from people in the inner circle. I mentioned to David that I was traveling this last couple of weeks in America, and a bunch of people who are inner circle members who I'd never met before came and spoke to me and said how much they were getting out of the program. So it's really nice what you're saying. It makes me feel very good. Thank you.
Well, the skyrocketing levels of autism and attention deficit disorder and violence in the schools, I really do feel this causal connection between the lack of parental time with the child and these tragic occurrences, especially because I was an assistant in a child care school, and I saw the way the assistants treated the small children. And at one center where they had a lot of babies, I was not hired because I wanted to pick up a crying baby. I was told if I pick up the crying baby, then this will cause the other children to start crying more.
Oy, that's tragic. It reminds me of the Soviet orphanages. Wow, that is just tragic. We've come so far. It's just terrible.
Well, I just want to say your courage is just beyond awe-inspiring to me.
You're very sweet. Thank you very, very much. I'm glad you're getting something out of it. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we have another question.
Please go ahead.
Hello. I also wanted to make a comment. I happen to be an assistant in a program, and I think we do a very good job. However, we have four-year-old boys, and I see a big difference in the homes where the mothers stay at home. And I wanted to mention to the questioner that there's no doubt that the parents make a big difference, and it is difficult, but Hashem gave you these different neshamas to raise, and he has faith in you that you are going to do a good job, and you're going to work on your midos, and you have he gave you everything you need to accomplish this task. And I wanted you to know that there is help too on how to grow and improve your midos so that you can be the best example for your children and and be successful. So keep hanging in there, because you're going to do a great job, and Hashem has faith in you, and get what you need so you can be the best mother you can.
Don't hang up. I want to follow up with you. That was a fantastic comment. I'm curious, what kind of a difference do you see between the children in the program that you work, where the parents are full-time parents, and the children where the parents are more absentee? What do you see that's different?
I see that they tend to be calmer. They get along better with the other children. They have an attitude of positivity, and they don't get discouraged as much. They tend to be curious and pursue rather than give up. They also, there's a sense of security about them. They just feel their mommy's there. I have one little boy this year. It's so sad. We had to hire a person to come in because he's having trouble transitioning. Every day he cries. This is a four-year-old. And the director will tell the parent, really, it would be ideal if you could keep the child home. But I guess in this particular situation, it's not possible. And we are working with them as best we can and supporting on the highest level. But there's some children who just need that extra year and that extra support from the parent. And you just see less, I think I see less acting out. I see a difference in just how they, and I have very different children, very different types, and I love it. But there is just, some children need to be home, and they just need to have the security of knowing their parent is there for them on a daily basis. And you see a calmness and a surety in them.
You're giving us a priceless report from the front lines. Let me ask you something else. You mentioned that there's ways for people to work on their midos. What did you have in mind there?
I think it's certainly good to be in a vod if they can work on their patience, on their savlanus. I think that's a very tremendous opportunity to work, to see and have tools in order to grow, because a lot of times we don't know what to do. We really get in a situation and we get over the top. And if we have tools and we're working on our midos, it makes it so much easier to step out. And there are textbooks, too. There are lots of books I'm reading right now, again, Battle Plans, and Rabbi Kellerman's book on To Kindle a Soul. But I really think it's worth having a course, like a VOD, where you're working on your midos. I found that to be tremendously helpful. It gives you a whole different perspective on how to handle these situations.
So important what you're saying. The people who are part of Inner Circle should be aware that this thing that you're referring to, the VOD, which is a very structured character development program based entirely on Torah, no secular psychology mixed in, this program exists right now in literally dozens of communities across America, also here in Israel, And there is an entire organization, the International Organization of Musarvadim, set up to bring a Musarvad to basically any city in the world. If there are enough interested people, the IOMV will send teachers anywhere, and they do. They fly teachers all over the world right now. So what you're raising is a very important point. It's hard to raise kids without working on your midos. Revolve himself writes that. And there's a way, there's a structure. I was hoping that you were referring to the Vadim when you made that comment. Wow. Okay, thank you very much for those comments. Really, really precious, valuable. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this. You can access many more hours of free, eye-opening content from Rabbi Kelleman at lawrencekelleman.com.
Copyright lawrencekelleman.com. All rights reserved.